Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 11, Chapter 14. Madame Chosse, who had been out to visit her daughter again, increased the Countess's fears still more by telling what she had seen at a spirit dealer's in Mayenitsky Street. When returning by that street, she had been unable to pass because of a drunken crowd rioting in front of the shop. She had taken a cab and driven home by a side street, and the cabman had told her that the people were breaking open the barrels at the drink store, having received orders to do so. After dinner, the whole Rostov household set to work with enthusiastic haste, packing their belongings and preparing for their departure. The old count, suddenly setting to work, kept passing from the yard to the house and back again, shouting confused instructions to the hurrying people, and flurrying them still more. Petya directed things in the yard. Sonya, owing to the count's contradictory orders, lost her head and did not know what to do. The servants ran noisily about the house and yard, shouting and disputing. Natasha, with the ardour characteristic of all she did, suddenly set to work too. At first, her intervention in the business of packing was received sceptically. Everybody accepted some prank from her, expected some prank from her, sorry, and did not wish to obey her. But she resolutely and passionately demanded obedience, grew angry and nearly cried because they did not heed her, and at last succeeded in making them believe in her. Her first exploit, which cost her immense effort and established her authority, was the packing of the carpets. The count had valuable Gobelin tapestries and Persian carpets in the house. When Natasha set to work, two cases were standing open in the ballroom, one almost full up with crockery, the other with carpets. There was also much china standing on the tables, and still more was being brought in from the storeroom. A third case was needed, and servants had gone to fetch it. "Sonya, wait a bit. We'll pack everything into these," said Natasha. "You can't, miss." "We have tried to," said the butler's assistant. "No, wait a minute, please." And Natasha began rapidly taking out of the case dishes and plates wrapped in paper. "The dishes must go in here among the carpets," said she. "Why, it's a mercy if we can get the carpets alone into three cases," said the butler's assistant. "Oh, wait, please." And Natasha began rapidly and deftly sorting out the things. "These aren't needed," said she, putting aside some plates of Kiev ware. "These, yes, these must go among the carpets," she said, referring to the Saxony china dishes. "Don't, Natasha, leave it alone. We'll get it all packed," urged Sonya reproachfully. "What a young lady she is," remarked the major domo. But Natasha would not give in. She turned everything out and began quickly repacking, deciding that the inferior Russian carpets and unnecessary crockery should not be taken at all. When everything had been taken out of the cases, they recommenced packing, and it turned out that when the cheaper things not worth taking had nearly all been rejected, the valuable ones really did all go into two cases. Only the lid of the case containing the carpets would not shut down. A few more things might have been taken out, but Natasha insisted on having her own way. She packed, repacked, pressed, made the butler's assistant and Petya, whom she had drawn into the business of packing, press on the lid, and made desperate efforts herself. "That's enough, Natasha," said Sonya. "I see you were right, but just take out the top one." "I won't," cried Natasha, with one hand holding back the hair that hung over her perspiring face, while the other she pressed down the carpets. "Petya, press, Petya, press, Vasilich, press hard," she cried. The carpets yielded, and the lid closed. Natasha, clapping her hands, screamed with delight, and tears fell from her eyes, but this only lasted a moment. She at once set to work afresh, and they now trusted her completely. The count was not angry, even when they told him that Natasha had countermanded on an order of his, and the servants now came to her to ask whether a cart was sufficiently loaded and whether it might be corded up. Thanks to Natasha's directions, the work now went on expeditiously. Unnecessary things were left, and the most valuable packed as compactly as possible. But, hard as they all worked, till quite late that night, they could not get everything packed. The Countess had fallen asleep, and the Count, having put off their departure till next morning, went to bed. Sonia and Natasha slept in the sitting room without undressing. That night, another wounded man was driven down the Povarskaya, and Mavra Kuzminichna, who was standing at the gate, had him brought into the Rostov's yard. Mavra Kuzminichna concluded that he was a very important man. He was being conveyed in a calèche with a raised hood and was quite covered by an apron. On the box beside the driver sat a venerable old attendant. A doctor and two soldiers followed the carriage in a cart. "Please, come in here. The masters are going away and the whole house will be empty," said the old woman to the old attendant. "Well, perhaps," said he with a sigh. "We don't expect to get him home alive. We have a house of our own in Moscow, but it's a long way from here and there's nobody living in it. Do us the honour to come in. There's plenty of everything in the master's house." "Come in," said Mavra Kuzminichna. "Is he very ill?" she asked. The attendant made a hopeless gesture. "We don't expect to get him home." "We must ask the doctor." And the old servant got down from the box and went up to the cart. "All right," said the doctor. The old servant returned to the calèche, looked into it, shook his head disconsolately, told the driver to turn into the yard, and stopped beside Mavra Kuzminichna. "Oh, Lord Jesus Christ," she murmured. She invited them to take the wounded man into the house. "The masters won't object," she said. But they had to avoid carrying the man upstairs, and so they took him into the wing and put him in the room that had been Madame Schoss's. This wounded man was Prince Andrew Bolkonski. All right, there we go, another chapter down, and J Mama 8779 said it best. My man, Prince Andrei, can't keep him down. You know, Tolstoy does this thing where it's literally the very last word of the chapter is the big reveal or the twist. It happened when Andrei died previously. The last word of the chapter was Andrei, I'm pretty sure. I can check that in a minute. And in this one again, the very last word of the chapter being Bolkonski. Huh. He keeps dying, he keeps coming back. Who Was Once Delight said, "This chapter was my big Luke, I am your father moment in adulthood. I didn't know Andrei well enough to be deeply affected by his first death, but this one floored me. When I got to the last line of this chapter, it was like a light went back on in my soul, and I was vividly aware of the fact that I'd only get to experience that shock and surprise once. Every time I read the story again, assuming I do, I'll already know he's alive." Turtle Vader said, "Perfectly put. What a twist." Very nicely said, Who Was Once Delight. I agree. And yeah, that was a great little twist. I actually, right when they first said that a very important person was coming in, I thought, ooh, what if it was him? I didn't get my hopes up, though. I didn't actually think it would be. I just thought, there's a chance. And then, boom, with the twist. Very satisfying. You got to love a little happy twist every now and then, don't you? Although, let's hope his wounds aren't too severe, because when the lady, who was it that saw him, the person saw him and her remark was, "Oh dear," I'm hoping that that was an "oh dear" because she recognized who he was and not an "oh dear" because she saw how bad his wounds were. Mellow Yellow said, "Why do they always assume he's dead?" Another good question. Maybe he's just one of those people who's so highly regarded in the army, that rumours fly around about these people more often than the small players, and a pretty juicy rumour. If someone's wounded, it would pretty quickly be exaggerated to he's dying or he's dead. Stratton Love says, does Andre have 9 lives? Seems like he might, doesn't it? I'm really excited to see what happens when Natasha sees Andre. What a moment that's going to be. You know, that's just eclipsed the whole start of the chapter for me. I can't even remember what happened at the start right now. What happened? So we had Natasha taking over. Oh, yeah, that was kind of cool, wasn't it? She took over and she wanted to prove herself not useless. And to my surprise, I've got to admit, it turned out she was actually quite practical and pretty good at packing. It seemed that she was better at it than Sonya. So she's not that useless. She's not stupid. She's just a bit scatterbrained. If you can get her to focus, she'll be very effective at what she's trying to focus on. But she's a scatterbrain. And the wheels are turning in my head, and I think I'm gone back around to liking Natasha again. I think I like Natasha again. I went off her for a little bit. I think I like her again. Tolstoy, he's got a way of doing that, doesn't he? He can go back and forth on a character 4 or 5 times. Quite well done. Alright, before I wrap up this episode, one other thing I wanted to mention. Today I got a little email notification from Bandcamp saying that someone had bought my audiobook of my novel. I made an audiobook of my first novel, which is a fantasy book. And I don't think I've ever mentioned that on this podcast. I kind of forgot about it, but I'm guessing Gerald is the person who bought it. I'm guessing Gerald is a listener, so if you are a listener, Gerald, thank you very much for buying my audiobook. But I thought it was probably a good thing to mention, because my first novel, you can listen to it as an audiobook for free. You can stream it on Bandcamp. It's andalewis.bandcamp.com, and I'll put a link in the episode description. Yeah, it's a fantasy novel, standalone, fast-paced, fun novel, and you can, like I said, stream the whole thing for free. I don't know why it didn't occur to me to tell you guys that earlier, because clearly you like audiobooks, and clearly, I don't know if you're this far in, 230-something episodes into this podcast. What are we up to? 240-something? 243 episodes into the podcast. Well, you at least don't hate me. So, it just makes sense that you might want to hear my novel as an audiobook. It's free. Or if you want to buy it as an album and download the whole thing to your phone rather than streaming it, you can buy it for $4.99 Australian. So whatever that turns out in American, I think it's even less in American. I will, if you don't mind, read you a few reviews of it, because I'm not very good at talking up my own books. You know, I'm a really bad salesman. So, I'm going to read you a handful of reviews. This will probably take me a few minutes. These reviews are from people who do not have a vested interest in me. They are readers, reviewers. They're not family and friends or even associates. These are people who I don't know who they are. Okay. To summarize this book in a single word, I'd have to say fun. Andrew Lewis wastes no time advancing the story's plot. So as a reader, you don't have to worry about that somewhat standard beginning book lull that many fantasy novels tend to have. I actually ended up reading this from cover to cover in a single sitting. This is by no means saying the book is short. The author simply shapes a story that makes you want to continue on to see what happens next. That was from Roger from A Daily Dose. Mark, reader, said, fast-paced and reckless, Andrew Lewis and Linus Smith endeavour in a tale of risk and folly past and present. The Liberation of Sundrian City is a fun and exciting novel. The book contains everything you want from the story and characters, and a hits upon the spectrum of feelings you want to feel, and creates plot lines that will keep you turning pages. Anna said, Lewis's new book announces a triumph of unbound thought and technological advances over social myths, old legends, modern taboos, and subconscious stereotypes in the least obvious of ways. Whilst the easy flow of his prose, simplicity of characters, and graphic action would certainly seem entertaining enough to younger audiences, his cleverly constructed trail of metaphors found in the choice of linguistic references and in the deliberate underdesign of the plot is what makes this tale appealing to more critical readers. Thanks, Anna. That review was better written than my novel. All right. Well, if that didn't sell you, I don't know what would. Plus, it's free, so, you know. What have you got to lose? If you're looking for more of my voice and you want to know what my story writing chops are like, well, at least what they were like 6 years ago or whenever I wrote that book, 8 years ago, geez, I'm old. Please feel more than welcome to go and check it out. Last thing I'll mention as well is I want to do another bonus episode, another Ask Uncle Leo, Dear Uncle Leo, sorry, podcast. So I'm putting out a request for new questions. So if you have a life question, some kind of life problem that you want some advice from, ask the question and I'll forward it on to Mr. Tolstoy and we'll see what he's got to say. Go to the A Year of War and Peace subreddit and you'll find the page there where I'm asking for questions. Dear Uncle Leo number 2, request for questions is the heading of the post. All right. Thank you very much for listening today. I'll see you tomorrow.